Welcome to Write Medicine, where we explore best practices in creating continuing education content for health professionals. I'm Alex Housen, and I'm on a mission to share expert insights and field perspectives on topics like adult learning, content creation techniques, effective formats, and trends in healthcare that influence the type of continuing education content that we create. Write Medicine is the premier podcast for CME CPD professionals like you, wherever you are in the content creation process. Join us.
The more effectively you target your marketing messages, your personal brand, then the better success you'll have. And really that comes down to you putting yourself in your client's shoes and going, well, if I were a client looking for a writer who specializes in CME, would I go for the writer who very clearly has that as an interest or a passion or a specialty, or the general writer who maybe kind of mentions it once but doesn't really, it's not very clear from their website or their LinkedIn that's an area for them.
Are you a medical writer struggling to stay competitive and confident in the rapidly evolving industry landscape? Experienced medical writer and educator Michelle Guilmar shares her insights today on how aspiring and established medical writers can navigate the challenges of an increasingly crowded field, economic fluctuations, and the rise of AI writing tools. Whether you're looking to break into medical writing, specialize in a niche, or future-proof your skills, Michelle's advice will help you chart a path to success and fulfillment in your writing business. Listen to today's episode to discover strategies for differentiating yourself and targeting your ideal clients in a competitive market. Tips for staying up to date with industry trends, health communication best practices, and emerging technologies. And insights on building confidence, resilience, and a well-rounded lifestyle as a freelance medical writer. Tune in to today's episode to learn how you can thrive as a medical writer in 2024 and gain the knowledge and inspiration you need to take your career to the next level. Welcome, Michelle. It's good to have you here on the Write Medicine podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You've been on my list of people that I wanted to have a conversation with for a while. And people always talk very warmly about your courses and the support that you provide for medical writers. So I'm really happy that you're here on the on the podcast.
Thanks.
So for people who don't necessarily know who you are, know what your work is, could you just share a little bit about exactly that, who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, my name is Michelle, obviously. I am a medical writer based in Australia. I'm up in the Sunshine Coast, which is north of Brisbane. I work for a variety of clients, mainly in patient education. So I might work on handouts for local government or hospitals, or web copy for health professionals. The way I describe it to people is I'm a bit like Dr. Google. When you look up something that you might be worried about, a treatment or a symptom, and you get a clear explanation of what that is, that's the kind of content that I specialize in writing. But I also have another business where I teach medical writers, and mainly aspiring health and medical writers, how to improve their writing skills so that they can then have the confidence to go out and find work, or whether that's as an employed writer or freelance. So I guess I've got these two businesses going. I do a lot of work on my courses and my teaching, but I also feel that I can't effectively teach if I'm not working in the industry as well. So that's why I'm still always freelancing for a few select clients to keep up my industry knowledge as well, so I can make sure that what I teach everyone is up to date and relevant and you know, the latest in best practice medical writing.
Well, we definitely want to dig into some of the things that you teach, but there's a couple of things that you said there. One is, you know, you use the terms both medical writing and health writing. So I think that's definitely something that we want to dig into, because people always have lots of questions about what's the difference between those two terms. But before that, how did you end up in this field?
Yeah, well, I love that question because, and I see this a lot with the students who take my courses too, there's no one way to get into medical writing or health writing, which we'll get to in a minute. And I think that's the beauty of it. You don't go to university and get a degree in medical writing. Everyone comes at it from their unique pathways, whether that's because they've been a medical professional and they want to sidestep into a freelance career, or maybe they're in communications and love the idea of focusing on a specific niche, health and medical content, or worked in healthcare marketing and decided to pivot. I personally started out as a travel writer, got a comms background from the University of Melbourne, and I was working in London as a travel writer and kind of looking around for different jobs and saw a job advertised at the British Medical Journal. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. So I ended up getting that job, working at the BMJ as a web content specialist for a couple of years, working with an amazing team of doctors on a few different websites, working really closely with medical content and learning so much stuff and thinking, this is really interesting. I feel like I've learned all this, all these new skills, and I don't want to put them to waste. So I'm going to stay in this industry. Then I came back to Australia and was working for another couple of companies in the health and medical industry as a medical writer. And in one of those roles, I was managing a team of freelance writers. And I thought, oh, that looks fun. Maybe I could do that. They work for lots of different clients, not just the one business, and they get to, you know, plan their own hours and go to the beach in the morning if they want to and work in the afternoon, and it looks like a dream lifestyle. I'm going to give that a go. So after I had my second daughter, I transitioned from my employed role to freelance, and I was lucky that I could still do some freelance work for my current employer, which is always a tip that I tell people if you are transitioning, just to try and leave your employment on good terms and maybe even contract with them as that to get that first client. And this was about 10 or 12 years ago. So things were quite different. There weren't as many freelance writers around. There was obviously the internet, but I think writers weren't as visible online as they were. So there was heaps of work around, and I was able to rank number one for medical writer in Sydney on my website for a really long time because there just weren't many people doing it. So I got heaps of work as a freelancer in it. And then I had a few clients saying things to me like, oh, can you teach me how to write? I don't know how do I do what you do? And I thought, I can't do that. And then I had one client who was sort of persisting and encouraged me to, you know, coach her. And I thought, okay, maybe I could do that. And then I set up a little coaching program and taught her how to write health feature articles and news articles. And that was kind of the stepping stone to my first writing course called Introduction to Health Writing, which has been now running since 2015. And I've lost count of how many students and how many times I've run it, but I am about to start one again next week, which is always exciting because it's been nearly 10 years of running that course. And so, yeah, there was a big demand for, I think, the education piece as well as the freelance work because, and I knew that, you know, when I started out as a medical writer, I would have loved to take courses in medical writing because I had to sort of self-teach myself a lot of things and I made a lot of mistakes. And I think if I'd been able to do some specialized training, that would have fast tracked me a lot, especially not having a health science background. I have a comms background. So, which is good for the type of work I do, patient education, because I can put myself in that patient's shoes. But then it makes when you are working with the more heavy scientific medical content, especially at the beginning of my career, that was challenging. I had to do a lot of work to make sure that I fully understood what I was writing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've covered a lot of ground there. And I think one of the things that's especially striking is you know, that theme of change. I agree, you know, I've been in CME for almost 20 years. And when I first started out, I love your phrase. There was heaps of work. Yes, there were fewer medical writers around. Mm-hmm. Continuing medical education is very niche. So it felt like there was less competition for the available work. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of, you know, you mentioned there are more medical writers around now. They are much more visible. Yes. On social media, particularly LinkedIn. And it feels like there is a kind of flood, might be too strong of a word, but it does feel like there's an incredible influx of people from healthcare, academia, clinical research into medical writing, because it offers, you mentioned one F word, which I don't hear very often, which is fun. But people often see medical writing as offering, or freelance writing as often offering, flexibility and freedom. So can you talk a little bit about some of the changes you're seeing in terms of who's moving into the field, why they're doing so, and what that means for training and education and professional development? Because it feels like maybe we're at a little bit of an inflection point there in terms of what's available for people.
Yeah, for sure. I have noticed exactly what you're saying. You know, there are a lot of medical writers out there on LinkedIn. There are a lot of people taking courses and looking for work and transitioning because maybe they have burnt out in their current career or have always liked the idea of having that freedom and flexibility and fun in their life. And I don't think that's a bad thing, actually, because there will always be heaps of work in the medical industry. It's a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. There are always new companies starting up. There are existing companies. There's so much content out there that needs writing, reviewing, updating all the time. So I think there's still a lot of work around. The fact that there are probably more people out there trying to get that work just means that you need to be a little bit more strategic with your business and your goals and who you're targeting. And if the idea of being on LinkedIn and seeing a lot of other writers out there maybe makes you feel less confident or stresses you out, or, you know, because you might be comparing yourself to them and going, oh, but they've done all this stuff and I'm new and how am I getting work, which is something else that I see all the time. I think, and I can talk about that a little bit later, the idea of having confidence in yourself, because I think the writers who do succeed are the ones that have confidence, not necessarily the strongest writers. You can have medical writers who are very skilled, but if they're missing that confidence piece and that belief in themselves, then they will find it hard as a freelancer to run the business and get the work. There are ways that you can, I guess, adapt to this, the changing environment, curating a LinkedIn feed where you're not having so many writers in there, I guess, posting things and making you feel a bit, you know, like you don't belong there because you're new. You know, you can shut out some of that and just focus on your goals, which are to find the work and to connect with your clients. I think that's really important as well in this industry, that if you read too much information, and I'm saying this as someone who does have a blog about medical writing, but I know that, you know, you can read maybe my blog and 20 other ones about medical writing and then freelance writing in general and then feel very overwhelmed and like, you, there's a million other people doing it and there's so much advice. It's all saying different things. So it is very important when you're starting out to narrow your focus a bit, and if you are feeling overwhelmed, pull back and then just focus on what really needs to be done. But back to the question of, I guess, you know, you were getting at, is there still enough work around? Because there are lots of people entering this industry because maybe COVID has made it more acceptable to work from home. Maybe people are realizing that they can have that work-life balance and not have to go do the 9-to-5 and be a bit more in control of their careers. I still think that there is a lot of work around, and I have been doing this for a very long time, and I've always had a steady lot of inquiries, even when I'm not really kind of looking for them. And I know a lot of other writers in my network are the same, and freelancing has always been very kind of up and down. And sometimes you'll get 20 inquiries in 1 week and sometimes you'll get nothing for 3 weeks. And it's always like that. It will always be like that. And I think there are still lots of opportunities out there. Like I said before, there are so many companies that need that content support and a specialized writer to deliver that. And that's where the benefit of you highlighting your niche skills and experience and why you're the best person for the job is going to come in handy. And that's the benefit of specializing in a niche within medical writing, I guess, and not branding yourself as a medical writer, but having that point of difference, targeting your business effectively, exactly like being a CME writer and targeting those clients. And if that's what you're interested in, that also leads to more fulfilling and rewarding work, and you're going to be happier because you're doing what you enjoy mostly.
Let's talk about that specialization piece and that niching down piece. I mean, personally, I am a huge fan of developing a niche, which can really be, you know, the type of work you want to do and the type of clients that you want to work with. How have you found specialization, you know, as a benefit in developing your business?
I think it's definitely important to have some kind of point of difference, whether that's that I'm a consumer health writer, or I work for government clients, or I write grant proposals. I think it is important to have a specialty area to give yourself that point of difference. You don't want a niche to the point where you are not giving yourself good opportunities to find other work. So that's why I think it's good to say, I specialize in these topics or this writing style, but I can also do other things. I think it's when we write content, we always say that targeted content gets better engagement and better results, right? When you're not writing for everyone, you're writing for a specific group of people and there's a purpose. It's exactly the same with in business, I think, when you're targeting your business to a specific group of clients, you're not trying to target everyone. And I think the more effectively you target your marketing messages, your personal brand, then the better success you'll have. And really that comes down to you putting yourself in your client's shoes and going, well, if I were a client looking for a writer who specializes in CME, would I go for the writer who very clearly has that as an interest or a passion or a specialty, or the general writer who maybe kind of mentions it once but doesn't really, it's not very clear from their website or their LinkedIn that's an area for them. So having a very strong LinkedIn profile and website that does highlight your specialty areas is important to capture those clients, because they will be reading your website and LinkedIn and making decisions about if they contact you for work based on what you say about your business and yourself. So always putting yourself in your client's shoes and thinking about it from their perspective helps you to understand, I think, how to focus your niche so that you are going to get that attention. But at the same time, there are some topics I think that you can specialize in, maybe mental health or, you know, some of those bigger ones, but it's probably hard to specialize in a particular medical topic and only do that. So I think you need to be careful about how you specialize, but it might be that it's patient education or web copy for medical professionals or CME or, you know, that sort of thing. But don't keep an open mind, and I think have the opportunity to do other types of work too. It would be my advice on that one.
You've talked about, well, actually, we'll circle back to that. The question isn't quite formed in my head yet. One of the things that we talked about when we were having a conversation about what we might focus on for this episode was, you know, 2023 was a bit of a funky year for a lot of people. I certainly had conversations with people who had the experience or their perception that there wasn't quite so much freelance work available. It was harder to connect with prospective clients, harder to sort of find that work. Markets go up and down. There has been sort of fluctuation over the last few years for, you know, a number of different reasons, and a lot of kind of chatter within, you know, the pharmaceutical community, the pharmaceutical manufacturer community, that profits aren't so big, there's a lot more uncertainty and so on. In these times of economic fluctuation, what strategies are crucial for writers to help them stay resilient and to keep finding that work? Are these conversations that you're having with your community and your networks as well?
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. 2023 was a weird year. I think we were kind of like, oh, this is the year that everything's going to be back to normal. But it still wasn't really. And we've still got those long-term effects from 2020. And as well, I think the whole introduction of AI writing tools really shook up that second half of 2023. But I think that, like you said, there's always going to be economic fluctuation. That is, things are never going to always just be, okay, now we're, you know, back to, I mean, there is no normal really. So I think what's really important to survive as a long-term, as a freelancer, is being flexible and open-minded. So that might mean that you are taking on different work than you would normally take on, or looking for different opportunities if the type of clients that you contact don't have that available work. Keeping up to date with everything that's going on, so you're very aware of industry trends and making sure that you're upskilled and that you are aware of the latest, whether it's AI tools or whatever it is, just so that you can be informed with what's going on in the industry. So staying heavily involved. I think really as well, a positive attitude is very important. It's easy to think that everything's negative, and if you talk to a few people and everyone's kind of finding it hard to get work, then you can also be affected by that. But focusing on your life outside of medical writing, your mental health and your self-care, making sure that in other areas of your life that you are happy, that you have hobbies, that you have a social network, all those things, they all help you to be more resilient when times get tough at work. Because so I think focusing consciously on having a well-rounded, you know, lifestyle is going to help you, and in general as a freelancer, but especially when things are tough. But I think having an open mind and having strategies for when the work isn't maybe coming in and you're not getting inquiries, and that might be even doing other things that aren't related to medical writing, but just to keep up your writing skills and to keep you working and earning income. So flexibility and being open-minded, I think, are the two ones, and still having that confidence in yourself that just because there might not be work around now doesn't mean that you are not good at what you do and that you won't get work later in future, tomorrow or next week. You know, anything can happen at any time in this industry.
Yeah, having that broader and historical perspective, I think, can be really healthy, so that you can really put a break on that sort of, on those internal voices that tell you, you know, this is because you're not doing the marketing correctly, you're not marketing enough. That there are sort of structural factors that drive the direction and buoyancy of freelance markets. Let's talk about three things you mentioned there. You mentioned upskilling, keeping pace with industry trends, and AI, new technologies. So when you're thinking about keeping connected with industry trends, what are the sorts of resources that you're looking at, that you're finding helpful to keep you up to date?
That's a big question. And I think it depends on the type of work that you do. For me personally, I will be looking at, I guess in my world, in my feeds that I curate, whether that's LinkedIn or maybe Instagram or whatever, or even news articles, newsletters that I'm subscribed to, I'm really interested in health communication and language. So making sure that I'm using appropriate language when I write for patients, because that's an area that changes a lot very quickly. Even disease names change, how we refer to patients as people, not patients, specialty topics within patient education, health topics, mental health, disability, all these areas. There's, you know, a lot of different ways that we talk about people and conditions, and I'm making sure that if guidelines change or if new guidelines are released, that I'm aware, so that I can then make sure my students are aware and also I can make sure that if I'm writing copy for my clients, that I'm not going to write something that someone might be, that, you know, might not be either compliant, or someone might not, might be offended by it, or it may not resonate as well. Or there may be a patient advocate group that has recommended it phrased a different way. So there's, for me personally, that's a big part of how I keep up to date with health communication and skills. There are lots of journals about health communication as well, where researchers study public health campaigns and they look at the messaging that worked and that didn't. And I find that really interesting as well to follow and see how, what results these trials get. It could be something to do with, you know, breast cancer awareness or smoking are the big ones usually, and they look at different campaigns and how people responded to them. So that's something that I follow as well, just to make sure, again, that I'm giving evidence-based recommendations in my courses and also in the content that I write. And then I guess generally just looking at what's going on in the communication industry and making sure that when we've got something big like AI going on, that I am very aware of what's coming, what's around, what are the issues, what are the risks. I think it's really important to actively stay up to date with the industry and not just expect that information to come to you through like scrolling. I think you need to make the effort to stay up to date, because no one's really going to give it to you. You'll just stumble across things. So carving out that time to go, all right, well, maybe once a week or once every couple of weeks or once a month, you know, things aren't hugely moving, you know, moving at a huge pace. But I think making time to consciously research what those areas that are important to you and your niche is going to be helpful for you. And as well, when you look at writing trends and communication trends, they're also selling points for your clients that you're up to date with those industry trends. And so then your clients can feel confident that you know exactly what's going on in your industry and you are writing best practice content.
Yeah, that's great advice. Talking about upskilling, you're obviously in the upskilling market as somebody who provides, designs and delivers courses for medical writers. And as far as I'm aware, you're kind of outside the association kind of network, the Australian Medical Writers Network Association, the American Medical Writers Association, and so on. And I am as well in the courses I deliver. Can you talk a little bit about that process of how you decide what to include in a curriculum, how you decide what type of courses medical writers need? And I know that you also do some additional sort of certification accreditation through the I forget what it's called, the CPD. You have that CPD certification. So I'm wondering if you can talk about,
yes,
as an education provider, what are some of the things that you're thinking about in order to deliver education?
Yeah. So I was very involved with the Australasian Medical Writers Association for a long time. I was the president for 4 or 5 years and was a committee volunteer. So we're a much smaller group than European and American, but we still do a similar kind of thing on a smaller scale, I guess. So that being involved in that was really interesting in terms of getting to know people and what they were looking for in training. And a lot of people who are looking for training are starting out. So they're really at the beginning of the journey. And they all kind of have the same questions and needs in terms of getting started and upskilling. I started my training business by having a medical writing blog and giving away some free courses and things. And so I always encourage people to write to me and say, and let me know what they are looking for, because I feel like I'm just going to give people what they want. That's my approach. If you have a question, if I get the same question coming back, then it's obvious that a lot of people have that question and that's the question that needs answering. So I just kind of think about what do people want to know and I try and give it to them. Now, obviously I want my training to be good quality and not just something that I've banged together in 5 minutes, because that's not what I'm about. And I know a lot of people do that sort of thing, but that's not my approach at all. So I thought, I know that I've put a lot of work into my training over the years, but how can I make sure that it's actually as good as I want it to be? So I sought the services of the CPD certification service who accredit courses. So what they do is they look at your curriculum in detail. It is a very long process, and they make sure that your courses, first of all, do what you say they do. So I write all my learning objectives, and I base them on, you know, education principles and learning principles that complement academic bodies. And then I make sure that the content in my courses matches my learning objectives. So the certifier also does that, and they go through the content, and then they might make suggestions about how I can further improve the structure of the course. And then they'll say, yes, that we're happy to certify that. So that is a long process, and I'm always really relieved when all my courses have that approval, because for me, it means that I know I'm delivering a good quality course and I want people to be happy with it and actually get something out of it. I don't want them to just pay for the course and that's it. And I want them to finish it and feel like they've learned a lot, and then they have more confidence, and that a whole new career has been opened up for them, and that they have a next step. And I think upskilling is an ongoing thing as well. It's never as simple as take my course and then you'll be fine. That's all you need. I think it's really an ongoing process. We all need to keep learning. We all need to keep taking courses and upskilling. Otherwise, we burn out and we just do the same old, same old. But I've also seen, and I was just having this chat with a student yesterday, that there is a danger in taking too many courses. And I think a lot of writers do that as a bit of a procrastination of getting started. And I do need to tell writers sometimes, don't take any more of my courses. Just, you're ready to start now because you don't need to. So there is a balance of upskilling, but then knowing when you're ready to take that next step and having that confidence. Again, confidence, I always talk about it. I'll probably keep talking about it. It's really the essential characteristic that you need to, when, once you have those writing skills, to get going.
But it's synergistic, isn't it? Your confidence also grows in the doing of things, I think. And so you absolutely need to take that first step and get into the habit of doing something. And that's one of the things that really kind of builds your confidence, because once you take that step, once you do something, you get some positive feedback, that kind of builds your confidence. So I agree taking courses can be a substitute for the doing. And sometimes you have to do the doing and make the mistakes, because that's how you learn. That's how you build confidence as well, by figuring out what works and what doesn't work. Just to kind of wrap up, you know, you've talked about AI a couple of times. Where do you see AI going in medical writing? Is it a threat? Is it an opportunity? Where do you sit in relation to that question?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. It's not a threat, especially in our industry where it's heavily regulated, it's evidence-based. If a type of client is going to say, well, I don't need a medical writer anymore, I'll just get AI to do it, then that's not the type of client you want to work with anyway. Obviously, they don't care about quality. AI can improve your efficiency because it will fast track some of your brainstorming process. So it might be that you use it to generate an outline, or you might have a sentence that you want edited, or, you know, there could be lots of different ways you can use it. It's never going to be, you're never going to say, write this 500 word article and it spits it out in 2 seconds and then you're going to publish it straight away.
No.
There's a lot more to it than that. It can do that.
But badly.
That you always need, exactly. And I think we can all tell now when something's been written by AI, especially ChatGPT. It's got that certain style and language. Mm-hmm. It's very obvious. So I think there's a long way to go until these tools replace us. However, there are ways that we can use these tools to our advantage. We can actually use them to improve our processes because they will save us time if we use them strategically. Just like using Grammarly saves you time in editing, which we've all been using Grammarly for years. So this is kind of just like an advanced version of Grammarly. You can also use it as a selling point with clients by saying, look, I use these tools as part of my writing process. It actually saves me time, which means I then complete the job quicker, which means faster, which means you then pay me less than if I wasn't using it. So if you can find ways to kind of incorporate it into your process, I think if you are using these tools, you need to be honest about it with your clients and yourself. Using these tools is not cheating, because you are going to be rewriting, reworking, editing, just like if you copied something into Grammarly and it suggested, here's how you rewrite all your sentences and here's a different word you can use and rephrase this passive sentence into an active one. And that's kind of what these tools do anyway. So I think if you're using Grammarly and other writing tools, then using AI, it's pretty much the same kind of thing, a tool like Gemini or ChatGPT, but you can't rely on these tools, and you'll probably find that the benefits of that you get from using them to actually write are minimal, and it can take you even longer if you get the tools to write something and then you go, oh, well, this is no good. I have to rewrite the whole thing. You might as well have written it yourself, right? But they're not a threat. They're not taking jobs. We do need to, they're not going away. So we need to embrace them and find ways to, like, you don't have to use them, but you might find that they're useful for some things in the type of work that you do. But anything that they're going to spit out to do with research or evidence or guidelines or recommendations or health claims, obviously you cannot, you need to check that, rewrite it, find the source. They're not good at finding original sources and they make research up and all this kind of thing. So maybe for generic spills, they're kind of okay, but I think that they're just a tool that we can use to be more efficient in some ways, but they're not replacing us and we need to embrace them because they're definitely not going away. So we can't put the blinkers on and go, oh, this is terrible, it's the end of writing. It is sad. I think we need to accept and acknowledge that. It's a bit sad that they exist, and it will change how we write and it has changed how we write. But once we get over that and mourn that next, you know, then we're like, okay, well, they're here now. So we need to either embrace them or we shouldn't be working as professional writers because they are here and we need to accept that. And it is a bit of a hard truth. But if you think about the evolution of writing, tools have been around forever.
Yep.
From typewriters to Microsoft Word editors to Hemingway and Grammarly and now AI. So writing is always evolving, right? And this is just the next step. But it is quite confronting, I think, because it has been such a big leap from, I guess, in the last 6 to 12 months when they've really taken over from a basic editing tool to the full. Like, it's quite impressive what these tools can do. In one of my courses, I give students a bunch of prompts, about 20 different medical writing projects. And I say, put this prompt in and see what this tool can do. And everyone's like, oh my God, this is very scary. But then it is scary and confronting. But then when you actually look at the quality of it, you go, all right, well, yeah, it's actually not that scary because I'm still needed.
Exactly. Well, on that note, Michelle Guillemard, upskilling pioneer and confidence queen, thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom with listeners of Right Medicine.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me and listening to me. I could talk about all this stuff for many more hours, so I'm glad that we've got an end point, because otherwise, yeah, I'd be here forever. But yeah, it's been lovely chatting with you, and I hope that the listeners have also found this interesting and valuable. And you can find me online if you have any questions that you would like to ask me about medical writing.
We'll make sure to have links in the show notes to where people can find you and also to your courses.
Great. Thank you.
So here are my takeaways from my conversation with Michelle. First, identify your niche. Reflect on your unique skills, interests, and background to determine your specialization in medical writing. Develop a targeted marketing message and online presence that communicates your expertise to potential clients. And if you'd like a niche identifier, message me or send me an email for a downloadable tip sheet. Second, curate your learning. Set aside dedicated time to stay informed about the latest trends, best practices, and technologies in medical writing. Focus on resources that align with your niche and goals, such as industry blogs, newsletters, like the Write Medicine Insider, webinars, and journals, like the American Medical Writers Association Journal. And third, embrace AI as a tool. Familiarize yourself with AI writing tools and explore ways to incorporate them into your writing process. Experiment with using AI to generate outlines, edit sentences, or streamline your brainstorming while maintaining your commitment to quality, evidence-based content. We're back on Monday with Monday Mentor, and on April the 10th, I'll talk to CME expert Susan Yarbrough about global CME and CPD. In the meantime, don't miss out on Write Medicine episodes, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite listening platform, and sign up for the Write Medicine Insider for CME and podcast updates. Stay curious and keep learning.